You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Grave and Matt Spaeth.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grave. I'm your host today. I had the privilege this week of spending the day with Joel Salatin, a third-generation alternative farmer, author, speaker, and you may remember him as the articulate farmer who appeared in the movie Food Inc. Salatin is a full-time farmer at Polyface Farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley and has authored 9 books. He was the featured farmer at an event I went to in Black Forest at a Joyful Noise farm. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Joel, you know, one question that I get asked all the time, you know, the biotech companies talk a lot about how without the GMO food, we're not going to be able to feed the world.
Right.
So what's your response to that?
Well, the response is that they are coming from a paradigm that is fundamentally segregated and mechanical. We're coming from a paradigm that is fundamentally integrated and biological. And when you start having a biologically based food system that runs on manure, biomass, compost, those kinds of things, and you look at our current segregated food system, which separates all those things, so that, for example, animal manures are lost in confinement animal factories and don't bless the fields from whence the food was grown, what you start seeing is that the historic carbon cycles that created fertility, that built soil, have been totally broken down. And when we reintegrate those, when we recomplete those cycles, suddenly the soil biology comes alive, the production comes alive, and it's really dramatic. And the fact is that compost is only as old as 1943 when Sir Albert Howard introduced it to the world. So our biological side is really, at least the science of our biological side, is only as old as the chemical side of fertility. So these have been two tracks that have gone together. And the other track, unfortunately, got a tremendous war effort encouragement through, you know, explosives, because, you know, chemical nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus is what they make explosives out of. Our side didn't get that help. And so here we are, you know, half a century later, with them getting a head start and us being ugly stepchild. But we've come a long way, and we are now passing them amazingly with our understanding of foliar fertilizers and with electromagnetically charged biological fish emulsion elements and the new science of composting and understanding the biology of the soil. It's quite amazing. That's one element. The second element, I think, is that we simply waste so much human food. 50% of all the human edible food in the world is wasted. And due to spoilage, due to long-distance transportation. So again, an integrated system where food is grown closer to home and doesn't have the spoilage suddenly makes, in aggregate, more food available because we're not wasting it all. And then I would say, thirdly, the land that we have, we're not using very wisely. I mean, we have 35 million acres of lawn in the U.S., and we have 36 million acres feeding and housing recreational horses. That's 71 million acres. That's enough to grow all of our food without a single farm. So backyard gardens are way more productive per square yard than monospeciated, you know, fields of industrial agriculture. It's just that we're not thinking that way because we're enamored of big combines and big machineries, and we don't realize what an aggregate integrated system can do. But it has always worked, and it actually will work again if energy prices go higher and we begin going to a more historically normal integrated type system.
Wonderful. And another question or response I get from many people about organics is, I can't afford it.
Sure.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah, you're right. Well, and this whole idea then that we're really a bunch of elitists, you know, because after all. And so My response to that is, whenever anybody says that, my first response is, all right, take me to your house. And here's what we're not going to see at your house. We're not going to see Starbucks coffee cups. We're not going to see soda. We're not going to see alcohol, tobacco, lottery tickets, Disney World vacation plans, Caribbean cruise plans, country club tickets, NFL football claim. Are you with me? I mean, we're not going to see those things. Because when we look at it, the truth is that we decide what we can afford. We really do. So our family, we don't buy any of that stuff, and we pay extra for our food, but we get really good food because we've elected to say, you know what? The per capita expenditure of food in the U.S. is, what, 8% of per capita, income? Just 35 years ago, it was 18%. And we've elected in our family to make it 15 or 18%. And guess what? We eat really well, and we don't have doctor bills, and we feel good. So that's one element. A second one is that the best thing that a person can do to bring the price of food down is to prepare, package it, and preserve it themselves. Buy raw food. Buy unprocessed food. Processed food is expensive. Whole baking potatoes are, 69 to 89 cents a pound. Two aisles over, boxed microwavable French fries in the frozen section is $2.50 a pound. And two more aisles over, potato chips in a bag are $4.99 a pound. Well, which one occupies all the store space? It's not the raw potato, but yet we have Cuisinarts, we have Time Bake, we have all sorts of cool, Fry Babies, and all sorts. We can make our own chips, we can make our own French fries, and you can involve the children in the kitchen. And the kitchen is a science lab, a chemistry lab, mathematicians. As we measure out parts and fractions and all this, and so this whole domestic culinary arts thing has a tremendous amount of real emotional, personal, and spiritual appeal to it, and can become the center, another nucleus of our lives that's just as important as ushering the kids off to the soccer game or the, Nutcracker suite or whatever. So, domestic culinary arts. And then I would suggest that the one of the third main reasons that our food seems higher priced is simply because the food regulations in our culture, and I'm painting with a pretty broad brush here, but the food regulations really do prejudice the small producer. When we have to, if we have to get a thermometer, for example, to do charcuterie that costs. A thermometer that costs, say $500,000. I mean, I'm not $500. It makes a big difference if you're making a tractor trailer load of charcuterie or a 5-gallon bucket full of charcuterie. And so a lot of the regulatory costs and paperwork and overhead and requirements and boxes to check are very prejudicial against cottage industry, small scale production and processing of foods. And so it creates an artificial pricing structure that is not scalable, and the scale, of course, then rewards the large producers and processors and artificially hurts the small scale. So it creates an artificial price burden. And finally, our firm doesn't take any subsidies, and we're not, we're not polluting anybody's water. We're not making anybody sick with foodborne bacteria. And so there are ancillary costs that society picks up from industrial food that we're not creating. So this is the real cost of food. If you factored in all of the ancillary costs, the societal costs of industrial food, from soil erosion to MRSA to C. diff, from subtherapeutic antibiotic use and superbugs, you would find out that the cheap food isn't so cheap. And so at the end of the day, I say our food is actually the cheapest food on the planet because all the costs are figured in. And that makes it a fair price.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So thank you for being a guest on Food Integrity Now. And Joel, for our listeners, do you want to give your website so they can find out more about the numerous books you've written
Sure.
and more information?
Sure. It's Polyface Farms. That's P-O-L-Y-F-A-C-E Farms. All one word, polyfacefarms.com. And you can just Google Polyface Farms. It'll pop right up.
Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.